For 3,000 years, men and armies fought over this land, never knowing what evil lay beneath it.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to the Ides of March.
Yes.
Better known as Derek's mother's birthday.
So I totally missed that lead-in. Oh, if this was basketball, I would have been the guy looking the other way while the ball went right past my head out of bounds.
I know. So, well, you know, yep. you called her, you wished her a happy birthday. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like she was having a great day.
Yeah, well, she got to see my niece and nephew all day earlier this week. And
what better way for a grandma to spend her birthday?
Absolutely, absolutely. And while I was on the phone with her, her puppy, who's not quite puppy anymore, but he still acts like a puppy, was busy crawling over her to show his affection. So, she was having a good day. So,
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. Well, we just got done with an interview with Tom Horn on the Q Files. He's sitting in for Steve Quayle this week on his broadcast. Boy, that was a fun conversation.
That was so much fun, and we talked about some really interesting stuff regarding Iran, Iraq, and Osiris.
Yep. So, in keeping with that, those topics, we'll jump right back in. The drums of war continue to beat. President Bush has said that he thinks that some of the components for these IEDs, the improvised explosive devices, are coming into Iraq from Iran.
You know, we've almost gotten into a Buddy Rich drum solo segment here because the drums are so rapid and so varied. Oh, gosh.
Buddy Rich.
Buddy Rich.
Oh, wow.
I grew up loving Buddy Rich.
Yeah, that's a name that younger listeners may not be familiar with. Although I shouldn't underestimate.
Nicole would know it.
She would.
I bet she would.
Yeah. In fact, I think I've got a couple of Buddy Rich albums back here and the stuff that my dad left to us.
Buddy Rich used to have a variety show.
He
when
did?
I was growing up. Yeah, not very long. I think it was a summer replacement or something.
Huh.
Yeah.
No. So anyway, this...
We digress.
Yeah. Yeah. Not that we ever do.
No, we never do. We're always staying right on subject.
So I think the implication of President Bush's statement, of course, is that since Iran is supplying components for these bombs, that we should then be allowed to go in and stop it.
Well, we're going to hear a lot about this over the next week or two because, of course, they're being taken to Iran is being taken and reported, like they're the playground bullies to the Security Council. But I want to know who is really behind the sectarian violence, so-called, that's taking place in Iraq, because this is really suspicious stuff to me.
Yeah, I agree. You wouldn't think that Iran would have a whole lot of incentive to create violence when the Shia are the dominant group in Iraq. And,
right.
Of course, Iran is a Shia nation. It's the Sunnis who were which is the power base for Saddam Hussein, who were in the minority.
Right. And the Shias are the ones who are expecting the Mahdi to come back. That was the whole point of the Golden Dome.
Right.
That's Shia, isn't it?
In Samarra, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So why would Iran want to blow that up?
You wouldn't. They wouldn't. But maybe this explains what happened last September with the British Special Forces guys dressed as Arabs and carrying explosives, and possibly the American security contractor who was arrested in northern Iraq on Monday for a couple of hours. Private security contractor, quote-unquote private security contractor.
I know, and as you and I both know, the private security organizations that are over there are organizations like Blackwater and maybe even Wackenhut, one of our favorites.
Groups that have a lot of ties to American intelligence. Mm-hmm. And many of the guys are either former intelligence or former military.
Yeah, now we are not saying that this man deserved to be kidnapped, not at all.
Well, he was arrested.
Yeah,
by security forces. But you're right.
Right. I was thinking about another story because there are some that have been kidnapped in Palestine. Is that where they were taken?
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know. I can't understand what the deal is. Now, it also seems to me like Ahmadinejad is asking for trouble. He's in our face every day making statements like the Holocaust never happened.
That is about the worst thing you can say. In fact, there are guys in Europe who are going to jail for this. David Irving, the historian, was recently sentenced by the by a court in Austria as a Holocaust denier.
Yeah, can you believe that?
Yeah, so in certain areas of the West, just saying that the Holocaust didn't happen is enough to get you arrested and thrown into jail.
Well, that's just ate up because there is so much documentation out there to prove that the Holocaust really did happen. And for Ahmadinejad to be saying these things, he's not stupid.
No, no, he knows that it's inflammatory.
Exactly.
It plays well to his base.
No, a leader making statements that play well to the base, that would never happen here. No. Well, that's a mystery that I think we're just going to have to kind of watch every day and see what happens. I think there are a couple of mysteries that we've got posted to Watcher magazine that have nothing to do with Iraq or Iran, strangely enough. Can you believe it? One of them is a story that just, it's the last thing I posted today on Watcher magazine. It's a story out of Washington, D.C., and NBC Channel 4 reports that a water main broke near Washington, D.C., and because of the chlorine in the water, hundreds of fish died. This is water that was going into people's homes. Because it goes on to say, the break caused thousands of customers to have a disruption in water service. So, if the water is going into my home, and it's killing fish... I want to know, how much chlorine did you put in that?
Yeah, exactly. Do your whites come out whiter when you run it through the wash?
Well, exactly. That I think there's something really fishy
about the story. Yeah, that is very strange. Another strange statement, by the way, speaking of strange statements by foreign leaders, one of the leaders of the Communist Party in Russia is accusing the United States of being behind the outbreak of avian flu.
Isn't that an interesting statement for him to make? Now, ordinarily, well, let me just say, 5 years ago, if I had seen that statement, I would have thought, commies.
Yeah, exactly.
Pinko commies. They're trying to make us look bad. Well, maybe this guy simply is trying to make a point that out of information that he has that may well be based in fact.
It could be. Yeah. The Communist Party leader in Russia, Gennady Zayuganov, made this statement. The forms of warfare are changing. It's strange that not a single duck has yet died in America. They are all dying in Russia and European countries. This makes one seriously wonder why. This was a press conference that he held in Moscow on Tuesday. So.
Exactly. And I want to remind our listeners, if you have not listened to one of our very first, in fact, I think it was our first interview, was with Dr. Henry Nyman.
Well,
in one of the first interviews, we talk with him about the Vietnamese outbreak, and he mentions that he had been corresponding with a scientist there, who was isolating flu viruses from pigs, from local swine, that had been imported from the United States.
That was South Korea.
South Korea. Thank you. Sorry, I said Vietnam. Yes, you're right. It was South Korea.
Yeah.
So why did we have U.S. pigs with flu that we sent over to South Korea?
Well, that's a good question. That is a good question. And that's a story that we are still kind of watching because the researcher in South Korea was working on a paper that has yet to be published. And so information about that story is not easy to come by. The thing that was really intriguing about that was that some of the sequences of the virus were very similar to a strain of Spanish flu virus that had been used in laboratory research in England in the 1930s, leading up to World War II.
And as I recall, it was a strain that we had here as well.
Right.
Which makes it very suspect. So it could be that this leader out of Russia has some information to which we are not privy, and he's not simply waving his finger in the air and screaming and yelling for nothing.
Yeah. Just letting it be known that he knows something and doesn't like it.
Yeah. Well, another odd story. This is a day for odd stories. If any of you are taking Ambien to sleep at night, you might want to check your bed in the mornings to find out if you have any candy bar wrappers in there. That's because apparently people taking Ambien are getting up in the middle of the night sleepwalking and eating.
Now, that's that drug that has a commercial with the green moth, the Luna moth flying around in it, isn't it?
I can't remember if that's Ambien or not. I always think of the one with the puppies. It talks about you have your natural sleep cycle, and when it gets interrupted, you need pharmaceutical companies to come in and help you out. Anyway, Ambien not only has that problem, but apparently it also has been linked to impairment in drivers. A number of drivers who have been involved in accidents, whether they lived or did not, their blood has been tested, and they have shown that they have Ambien in their system.
Wonderful. Could this be, and I don't want to speak out of turn here and make accusations falsely, but we have seen a number of prescription medications over the last couple of years where it has come out after the fact, sadly, that there were unintended and unexpected side effects and consequences.
Well, it could be, and I see a lawsuit in the making. In fact, I'm betting that lawyers right
already
now
picked
are,
up on it. Sure,
oh,
I'll
sure
bet
you're they
right.
have. You know they have. You will notice though when you watch those Ambien ads that they say don't take Ambien if you cannot get at least 7 or 8 hours sleep.
Right.
And don't take it for long periods of time. Check with your doctor. All of the legal things that they have to say.
Sure.
But they don't say.
Lock the fridge.
Exactly. They don't say anything about that.
Hide
Do
the
not
host.
Put Krispy Kremes. Krispy Kremes.
Well, the path to sainthood for John Paul is being made a little more straight. The official investigation into the first John Paul miracle is now begun. An official inquiry into whether a French nun's inexplicable recovery from Parkinson's disease was indeed a miracle that can be attributed to John Paul II is now underway in Rome. Exactly 2 months after the death of the Pope, according to Monsignor Slawomir Oder, from 1 minute to another, this nun didn't show the symptoms of the illness anymore. Now, apparently she had Parkinson's so badly that she couldn't work. Her hands shook too badly. But she has been cured, and they are attributing this to John Paul II. So the Vatican has begun to investigate. That would be one miracle, and he would have one more to go in order to qualify to become an official saint of the Roman Catholic Church.
I remember that story coming out sometime before Christmas, I think, of last year. And I guess one of the really important parts of this is that John Paul II had Parkinson's himself.
Right.
Therefore, that's why there's a really poignant connection for this quote-unquote miracle.
I recall that there was a story from Mexico that somebody was claiming shortly after John Paul passed away that he already had been witness to or the recipient of a miracle that he attributed to John Paul. So, but this is the first one that's being investigated, so we'll see how this goes. Now, if you've listened to us for any length of time, you'll know that, you know, according to the Bible, anyone who accepts Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior is a saint.
Exactly.
So, we're in the company of saints every day.
Well, honey, you're a nice saint, like Simon Templar. Well, my question to you right now is not so much, do you have a saint in your house, as it, do you have a cat or a dog that may have a virus? And it may not be the kind you think it is.
Oh, I think
is
I know
your
where
dog
going.
Or cat chipped? Because those RFID chips are apparently vulnerable to viruses.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I know that this is one way that the RFID tagging concept is being sold to Americans. We'll get them through their pets first. And once we show people how safe it is to chip their pets for ID purposes, that we can track them when they're lost, return them to owner, even if their collars are lost or removed or whatever, then we can begin to sell them on the idea of getting chipped themselves. But yeah, it is interesting that they're finding that these little low-tech RFID, low-power radio transmitters can actually be hacked. This is something we've been talking about all along. Like, duh.
Yeah, exactly. Excuse me, but it's a chip. It's a computer chip.
And if all you need to program it is a radio magnetic, electromagnetic signal of some sort, one would assume that a bright individual could figure out how to make a portable device to reprogram those chips.
Well, here's what I think. I put my hat on.
Sharon dishes.
Yes, Sharon's dish. It's delicious. You know, the thing about these chips is supposedly they only hold 128 characters of information. Mm-hmm. That is just practically nothing. Just barely enough to put the name of the company and whatever the item is or something like that, whatever your dog's name is. Viruses probably are bigger than that.
Probably.
So I guess the thinking was that it didn't hold enough information for a virus to infect it. Therefore, perhaps these chips hold more than we've been told they hold.
Yeah, as I understood the article, the guys who are demonstrating this concept are going to show how they can infect a tiny portion of the chip's memory by using as little as 128 characters. Mm-hmm. So you're right. If they can hold more than that, they could certainly do more damage with that. And I think you're exactly right. We only have the word of the people who are trying to sell us these devices.
Yeah, seriously, this is just a is a read-only thing.
Yeah, it's secure. Well, if you're going to put your medical records on it, you go in for a procedure, they have to somehow update those records on the chip. Mm-hmm. How do they do that if it's read-only?
Mm-hmm.
Answer, it's not read-only.
It's not read-only.
Yeah, if you're going to control, if you're going to have your banking on there, and you know that that's coming too, oh, the only secure SpeedPass type system. Just wave your hand over the scanner.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're going to have to update that information from time to time.
No.
So, yeah, it is a concept that we have employed in our novels because it just only makes sense. And, you know, we're not geniuses. If we can think of this, it's already been thought of.
Oh,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
So,
I've said that for years. If I've thought of it, somebody did it long ago.
Right, right.
Well, one last story, and this is going to lead into our Tom Horn interview.
Ah, excellent.
In fact, we talked about this with Tom very briefly tonight as we were discussing Egypt and Iraq and Iran. And if you haven't listened to that, listen to it on the archives tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
You want to listen to that, go to stevequayle.com.
Mm-hmm.
Q-U-A-Y-L-E. Egypt Sphinx gets a facelift.
Needs one, too. There's no nose.
Needs more than a nose. It needs lots of stuff. It needs some color.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and come on, these water markings on it.
So they take it into style court?
How else on one side? And I don't even want to think who'd be on the other side. Apparently, they're just going to, you know, spruce it up. And I looked at this and I thought, well, good for them. That's really nice. Probably needs that. But maybe they're sprucing the Sphinx up because there's something big about to happen.
Oh,
they
yes.
want the Sphinx to look really hot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, leave it to us to put a conspiratorial spin on this thing. But you may well be right, because there have been other plans, notably the plan to put the golden capstone on the Great Pyramid mm-hmm. on December 31st of 1999, which fell apart at almost the last minute.
Well, I'm going to even have my hat on, you know,
even further.
Like two hats. Call me Sharon Two Hats.
The rabbit ears, tinfoil hat.
And it really hits, you know, my hat fits kind of funny now because my hair is extremely short. And I'll just let you think about that because we'll tell you about that. More on the hair tomorrow. But maybe this is to cover other activity taking place in the Sphinx.
That could be. That could be.
If we say we're sprucing up the Sphinx, then we don't have to explain why all these people are around there.
Exactly. We've got scaffolding all over the place and workmen going here and there. No one's going to notice the couple guys that slip into the tunnel at the backside of the Sphinx.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting. And again, as Sharon mentioned, we did talk about this with Tom Horn tonight on that on the Q-Files broadcast, because there are a lot of new age religions and beliefs that focus on something being discovered or unveiled at Giza,
mm-hmm.
around the Great Pyramid or the Sphinx or both. And all you have to do is go to Richard Hoagland's website, the Enterprise Mission website, to see how he ties that together with Mars and all of these connections that are supposed to mean that something important to us today on a spiritual level is centered on Giza.
Well, you know what? For those of you who perhaps listened to Tom Horn and, you know, the two of us discussing things earlier and you just can't get enough of Tom Horn. Well, here's part two of the interview that Derek did with Tom just last week.
Well, Tom, as we finished up yesterday, we were talking about your keynote speech before the National Religious Broadcasters Association and how that went over like a lead balloon. Sharon was at the NRB a couple of years ago, and we've attended a couple of conventions now of the Christian Bookseller Association for the novels that we write and so forth. And I will tell you, there are a lot of wonderful people at those gatherings, and it is a real blessing to get together and exchange thoughts and encourage one another and pray and so forth. But there's an awful lot of commerce going on there as well. And
one of the things, yeah, go ahead.
And I was going to say, do you get the same sense then that what we're seeing in this dominion theology is more about power and the exercise of it in the earthly kingdom than it is about glorifying God?
Oh, yeah, definitely. But what I would say is that a large number of the people, like I say, you know, I think I'm a pretty good guy. And it was never my ambition to dominate the world, you know what I mean, to take over planet Earth. And I bought into a lot of what was being said at the time because, you can essentially make the Bible say or justify anything you want it to if you're clever enough.
Mm-hmm.
And heresy is easy to detect when it's blatant. But when it uses scripture and when it's coming from people that you trust, you have this, you have this desire in your heart to believe that these people that you care about, that you have faith in, would not lead you astray.
Well said.
That they just wouldn't have a reason for doing that or a motivation for doing it. And frankly, I wasn't the only one. You know, I was talking a moment ago about DJ Kennedy, but Cal Thomas, who is a syndicated columnist. I'm sure most of your listeners are familiar with him, with Ed Dobson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are guys that helped Jerry Falwell start the Moral Majority, which was firmly entrenched in dominionism. Cal is an acquaintance of mine. I consider him to be a friend, and I think he considers me to be a friend. He's commented more than once. He's emailed me more than once on Raiders News Update articles, and he's written little ditties for some of my articles to be published. And in fact, he provided a written praise for my new book, The Ahriman Gate, which he allowed to be published. And in fact, when he sent it to me, I sent him back and said it's not edited very well. So he edited it and sent it to me again. But Cal himself, you know, he was having questions too. Back in the 80s, he was helping Jerry Falwell, man. They formed the Moral Majority. He was one of the original people working with Jerry Falwell on that. But then finally, in the 90s, he wrote a book called Blinded by Might. The whole point of that book was that dominionism misses the point, that it takes out of the church the dunamain, the dynamite of God, the power of the preaching of the gospel. It takes away from us the spiritual side, and it seeks to facilitate the implementing of the will of God on earth through the political process, which is a complete fallacy, and anybody that's a student of history knows that. But so there were other people, not just me and not just Cal Thomas, not just Ed Dobson. I mean, there was a lot of people who bought into this and who were part of it and who were going around preaching the gospel of dominionism, but that at some point they realized that it was the wrong road to be going down. And, they split with that movement. I split with that movement. And I still have friends in that circle, some of them very close. Michelle Pitzer, who is part of the worship team, leads the worship team for Joyce Myers, which is probably right now one of the largest, ministries in the world.
Just a stone's throw from here, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, but Michelle owns a studio there in, you know, not too far probably from where you live. Mm-hmm. But her parents live here in my state, very good friends of mine. We go to dinner. We went to dinner last week. Went to Chevy's Mexican restaurant
last week. One of our favorite places.
But, I mean, these are friends of mine. Jeff McLaughlin at Run CCMNI got Twyla Paris started. Mm-hmm. He's a friend of mine. These are good people. These are good Christians. And but unfortunately, they're part of a very large mass of people, many of whom would even be listening to this radio program, who are inappropriately guilty by association. In other words, I mean by that they don't understand when they're putting their money into something and they're listening to these guys talking about, you know, doing the will of God by pulling the voting lever the correct way and establishing the kingdom of God on earth. All of it sounds so good. It sounds so real. Man, it sounds like exactly what we ought to be about.
Right.
And these are not people who think somehow that they're not doing the will of God. These are not people who think that they're, you know, they're en route to world domination through governing and legislative branches.
Mm-hmm.
But many of us, I put myself in that pot because I definitely was there, missed the boat, and can unintentionally involve ourselves in the support of cultish teaching.
That's a pretty bold statement.
It's a bold statement, but, you know, if we don't know, I mean, we're not judged, you know, in the same way Jesus said to the Pharisees, if you understood, you know, how great would your darkness be if you understood that you were in darkness? So, but what people need to understand is that when it comes to dominionism, it is, in fact, a cult. And I want to try to race forward because I know we only have so much time.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only a cult, Derek, in my opinion, it's a cult of the worst kind. And that was what I started becoming concerned with back mm-hmm. in the 1980s. I've been concerned with it ever since. When I finally decided to walk away, and mm-hmm. I have to tell you, it concerns me. The whole idea of it concerns me now more than ever before. Mm-hmm. I'm actually thankful that the Jerusalem Post either printed something that was true and then denied or inadvertently printed something that never was true last week, because it brought us to a subject that I think has a lot to do with where we're at in the world right now. It has a lot to do with where we're at in the church. It has a lot to do with where we are in the administration.
Mm-hmm.
People who believe that they are doing the will of God by blending earthly politics mm-hmm. with church authority.
Right.
And it seems to me that there are significant, and what should be obvious, I think now, problems. Not just problems, scary, prophetic possibilities in that mix.
Well, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, not just talking about confusing foreign policy with end times eschatology, but, I mean, just looking back at history and all the problems that this world has had, when
right.
you mix earthly power with professed authority from God, I mean, the whole history of Christianity from the time of Constantine, you know, on, basically has been about the misuse of earthly power in the name of God.
That's right.
And, you know, ironically, I think, in certain sectors, in some ways, evangelical Christians may be more like the medieval Roman Catholic Church than they care to believe.
Well, and that's where dominionism is taking us.
Mm-hmm.
Look, theoretically, now I'm only talking theoretically, it is possible to have either a true theocracy. Now, you know, if you look up the word I haven't done this in a gazillion years, but if you look up the word theocracy in a dictionary, it probably says something about the attempt to form for the government to operate through under God, through somebody's idea or interpretation of the rule of God. But purely in a theological sense, when you talk about theocracy, you're talking about what Israel had before they asked God for a king. You're talking
right.
about. You're talking about.
The time of the judges.
Yeah, I mean, well, what I was going to say is that you can have one or the other,
mm-hmm.
but you can't have both.
Right.
at least not simultaneously. That whole notion is irreconcilable. What dominionism tries to do is not possible, really, in theology. Remember when Israel, when they did ask God for a king, God says to them, I'm all you need. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, when the cloud moves, you move with the cloud. When the cloud stops moving, you stop moving. You know what I mean? And they just followed God, and it was a spiritual thing. I mean, an invisible force was leading the covenant people. That was a theocracy. And then, you know, they had the leaders of the tribes, and they had the prophets who could speak and whatever. But they were led only by whatever God said and did at that moment. But then they insisted that they wanted to have a dominionist form of government. They wanted both God and an earthly king. Mm-hmm. They wanted politics and spirituality. And so God gave them Saul, and their problems began. Why would the church today? Why would the church today think that it is a good idea to, from the pulpit, ecclesiize political figures in order to satisfy the work of God? Whenever we know that God the Father in the Old Testament and Jesus in the New Testament made it clear what you said at the outset of this program, that His kingdom is not of this earth, and that what is rendered to Caesar is different than that is rendered to God.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, it's so because there's a quid pro quo. That's why. I mean, that's the pastors are getting something out of their support for specific political figures.
Well, certainly those who have something to gain monetarily or megalomanialy, whatever that word is, in terms of either power and control and affluence or dollars or whatever, I mean, there's obviously those people. But you know, those are people who they make their own decisions, and if they're going to go down that path, they're going to be judged by God. But what hurts your heart are the flock.
Mm-hmm.
Those that listen to their shepherd and they buy it,
mm-hmm.
and they think it's right, and therefore they pour part of their lives into building this kingdom on earth. And what they don't realize is that by focusing the energy of the church on political reform and aspirations as opposed to the preaching of the gospel, they're actually stripping the church. They're stripping the body of Christ. They're stripping their local community from what Paul called the dynamic, the dunamain, the dynamite of God, the power of God unto salvation.
Mm-hmm.
They're taking that out of their communities, because true spiritual life, it doesn't come from the pulling of a voting lever. True spiritual life is the antithesis, Paul says, to the law, in that what the law could not do in that it was weak,
mm-hmm.
Christ came and He died, and He offers us a spiritual authority, a spiritual reclamation, a spiritual power, a spiritual life, a true faith. And so, you know, when we're talking about dominionism, you just have to make the point that more important than just having faith is having faith in the right thing.
Right. Everybody has faith in something, but is what you have faith in true?
And there's no doubt that, you know, I don't know what the numbers are up to now, but they're in the tens of millions of people that consider themselves to be evangelical Christians,
mm-hmm.
who actually believe. I mean, they believe that they are satisfying a responsibility to God by going into the voting booth on election day and pulling the voting lever for the, you know, most of the time nowadays for the Republican Party.
Right, yeah.
Now, and like I said earlier, I believe that voting is a privilege. In fact, in America, I can buy that it is a duty.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't have anything, or at least very little, to do with the preaching of the gospel,
mm-hmm.
or the fulfilling of the Great Commission. And anybody who disputes that, any dominionist that wants to dispute that, I would challenge to show me the precedent in the life of Christ, or in His disciples, or the New Testament church in the book of Acts. Show me where they practice or taught that voting and politicking, making yourself part of the local political process, was the method for satisfying the Great Commission. That's baloney.
Well, exactly. No, you're exactly right. He told the 70 when he sent them out, you know, go to the towns and preach, and if they won't listen to you,
leave and shake the dust from that town's shake that town's dust from your sandals as a reproach on your way out of town.
And that's the problem with dominionism, because dominionism actually seeks to stealthily establish a state church, mm-hmm. a federal church.
You're right.
You know, Pat Robertson, because he's an attorney, he knows that the First Amendment to the Constitution under the Establishment Clause would never allow the U.S., unless we change it, would never allow the U.S. government to create a federal church outright. And so, much of what I learned this by being there, by the way, much of dominionism's quest is to use state and federal courts to impose their vision of God's will for everybody else by keeping quiet about what their true, far-reaching goals are. Once again, I've actually been there. I remember being the guy who was speaking. I was selling this stuff, man. I was selling my books, but I had the brochures all over my tables as the crowds were being told to be careful, be friendly, don't push your ideology, at least not at the early points in time. We need to get our people in power. I'm not kidding you, Derek.
No, I have done enough research on it to know that to have learned that this is a belief that is being that guides the actions of those who believe that the political system and the courts are the means to enact God's will here on earth.
That's right. And once we have our people in position at the, you know, everything from school boards to the federal courts, when they're in place, then we can affect the laws which guide, the rule of law. We can affect the rule of law on every level. And once we've done that, of course, we can impose biblical morality on people, whether they want it or not. Now that, you know, a lot of that sounds fine and dandy, but it certainly is far outside of the gospel that was preached by Christ. Look, I remember in the late 1980s, and Pat Robertson was involved with this, and he had a memo to the Iowa Republican County Caucus. And it was being passed around to different select people at that time. It was a memo that was, and you could probably look this up on the Internet, I bet you anything, that is still in print. It was called How to Participate in a Political Party. And in that memo, he actually wrote, rule the world for God. But here's what he said. Now, he said, give the impression that you are there to work for the party. Don't push your ideology yet. Hide your strength. He actually said that. Don't flaunt your Christianity. Because he said Christians need to get into leadership positions, and especially at the highest level, because party officials control political parties. And so it's important that Christians get into the controlling factions, have a majority of leadership positions wherever it's possible. Well, Derek, besides what at that time started bothering me about the deceptive nature of what we were doing, mm-hmm. It misses the point. It doesn't even really matter that it was deceptive. It completely misses the point that the pilgrims, that you brought this up either a moment ago or offline in between while we were doing these programs, the pilgrims fled Britain partly to escape that kind of a political
right.
system that tried to impose, you know, rules and morality that was defined by a particular sect on the larger population. Many
That's
of
right.
them didn't even agree with either the politics or the theology.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why the framers of the Constitution, once they got here and they fought bloody wars and they died to preserve certain liberties, individual, free-thinking liberties. They fought and they died for it because they believed that it was definitely the model of Christ. It was definitely the model of God who, himself, who doesn't breach free moral agency. And so they wrote the Constitution, they wrote the Bill of Rights, and they were careful to take steps to protect the individual, whether they're part of the majority or the minority, to protect them from a belief system, from religious mandates being handed down from a federal judiciary whose decisions might either be in support of or against statements of faith. It was actually Thomas Jefferson, by the way, who wrote, and you might remember this because you're a student of history, but he wrote to the Danbury Baptist Association.
Right.
And they wanted him to use his office as the president to rule in their favor against a particular state law. And he wrote back that he would not do that because there was a wall of separation between church and state. And he wanted them to know that it was important that the federal government not take the position of favoring a particular religious ideology. And under this kind of constitution and bylaws, America has flourished to become the bedrock for all kinds of people, for all kinds of faith, for everything from an atheist to born again Christians to people that worship a head of lettuce, you know. and it's important that people understand. I am a fundamentalist Christian. Mm-hmm. But I want the guy who wants to worship a head of lettuce to have the right to do it. And if people don't understand that, Derek, I can't help them.
No, I think that's an excellent point. That's an excellent spot to break. You mentioned something, though, that I want to get into next time, and that is your statement that this theology, this dominionist theology, is providing the doormat for the appearance of the Antichrist. So we'll talk about that when we continue with our guest, Tom Horn, tomorrow on PID Radio.
Well, that wraps up part two. Part three is going to be tomorrow. You don't want to miss that.
No. Got to admit, Tom's got some guts. I went back and I listened to the first part of the interview this afternoon, and just hearing him tell about standing up in front of the National Religious Broadcasters annual convention as a keynote speaker, holding up the book by Pat Robertson and saying, "This is opening the door for the introduction of the Antichrist."
I know.
I can just imagine.
Look, I have been at that convention. I know what that convention's like.
money.
Oh, boy, that is the truth. I went to that convention a couple of years ago, and I called Derek from there. And I said, "Honey, this is not at all what I expected. I expected to get here and, you know, find, like, a pitch-in supper. And, you know, it was going to be just good time, Charlie." Mm-hmm. These people are serious.
Yeah.
It was a sea of black suits and cell phones.
Mm-hmm.
These people are business people.
Yeah. Now, we don't begrudge people making a living.
No.
And especially if they've been given a gift to broadcast or whatever. It's just a very fine line that has to be walked.
Yeah.
And this applies to any business that you're in. But it's especially dangerous, I think, when you're doing it in God's name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, our prayer is that should that temptation ever be thrown in front of us, that we'll be properly guided. Thankfully, that hasn't happened yet. So,
you know what? I think if we ever start acting uppity, if somebody will just start throwing Krispy Kremes at me, I'll dive on them and start eating them. So, you know, all of my dignity will be lost right there.
I have a suspicion that a few of the folks in our Peering into Darkness forum would be the first to tell us when we start. And thankfully,
and
that is
rightfully so.
So
they would, and that's exactly what we expect from good brothers and sisters in Christ.
Well, keep in mind, the forum is always open for your comments or questions or just to kick around ideas that occur to you. We've started now a Bible study where we're going to go through a chapter a week. And right now we're working on the first chapter of the Gospel of John. Interesting ideas. In fact, I posted something that just occurred to me, and I've got to go back and read, you know, how this has been followed up on. But scientists have discovered that the body actually emits photons, emits light.
Mm-hmm.
And
we were talking about that. It's really cool.
Yeah, it is. And when you consider the imagery that John employed in his gospel, all through the gospel and his letters, about the contrast between light and darkness, and then one of the verses in John is that brain blanking out. I'm sorry. in him was life, and referring to Jesus Christ.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was God.
Yeah, but talking about how the life comes from Jesus Christ, and in him is the light, and the life was in man. So, you know.
Wouldn't it be interesting for a scientist to do a research project where they compared Christians and non-Christians?
As far as the amount of light emitted?
Yes.
Oh, that's brilliant. Ooh, okay. Well, we've got homework to do now.
Yes, we do. Well, you got to go to the forum because it is open 127 hours a day.
That's right.
It's open 24/7, 365. And if you're taking Ambien and you wake up in the middle of the night and you want a snack, go to the forum because it's fat-free.
That's right. And, of course, we always are happy to take your emails and questions and comments there. radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
That's right. Well, I think we're going to have to quit for now because we've just blathered too much and I'm hungry. I've talked about food way too much. So it's either food or Ambien. I don't know. One or the other.
Until tomorrow, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Have a great evening, everybody.
Gonna step up to the microphone. Say it loud and clear. A better day is coming.